Well, it was an honor to have Phil call me and be able to come down here and talk to everybody. And, what I'm probably going to go over most tonight is just the seasons, the patterns, and the different lures and stuff that that we use up on stocking. Now, right now is the winter. You got a summer pattern, a winter pattern, spring and fall. And that kind of all kind of determines where you're going to fish, what you're going to be using, and the presentation and things that you're going to be using. Most of the time, I just use nothing more than an eighth-ounce jig head. I brought some here. I mean, everybody kind of knows what a jig head looks like. It's nothing fancy. Just put an eighth-ounce jig head on with a little two-inch grub on it, and that's about all it really takes to catch the crappie. Certain times of year when the crappie fishing gets a little bit tougher, they're not biting as good, you can throw a crappie niblet on it or some smelly jelly or something like that that just makes it the fish a little bit more active sometimes. As far as presentation goes, you can vertical fish them, and that's just first fishing them up and down and kind of jigging it or something, casting them and casting down either channel drops or into brush piles and bringing it back real slow, or you can troll for them using crankbaits and different items like that, or slow troll some jigs or something like that out in 30, 40 foot of water, depending on where the fish are. Right now, the winter pattern's kind of going on. We've got ice just got off the lake, I guess yesterday pretty much. I broke through some ice, about 2-inch ice, to get out some open water so we could go fishing. And then as soon as I got out there, everybody was, I think 6 more boats came by, so they were looking. Everybody's, it's been a long, cold winter, as everybody knows, and everybody's looking for open water to fish. And I think the lake's pretty much open now. In the winter time, which is my favorite time to fish, you don't have near the pressure, and the fish are all congregated. Once you find crappie, you're going to be on them, and you can sit there and catch a limit most of the time, or at least catch enough for dinner. It's what I did yesterday. But what you're looking for in the winter time is finding schools of shad, and it's not really that hard. The better electronics you have in the winter time, the better off you are. But even some of the cheaper stuff, even a flasher, one of the old Super 60 flashers, will show you where the shad are. I mean, all you're looking for is a big ball on your screen that goes by, and depending on how many pixels and stuff you have, how great the picture shows up. But you're looking for that, and then you're looking for the arcs underneath it, or in it, or above it, or wherever the fish are hanging out, and you drop your jig down to them. And depth is key at this time of year. The shad are usually, they don't move a whole lot, just like the crappie don't move a whole lot. And everybody, I got some emails just yesterday. People asked me what I was doing whenever I found the shad, because they weren't catching anything. And a lot of people try casting into the shad and bringing it back, or casting a spinner or something in there, a little pony head or something. But the way I catch them in the winter time is I find the shad, find the fish underneath the shad, and then drop down into them, and I hold the thing as still as I can. There's no movement. The fish aren't looking to go chasing things. They're just cold as we are. I mean, they're cold-blooded animals. They're down there in 35-degree water, and they're not looking to go swimming all over the place for food. So the stiller I hold it, I think the more bites I end up getting. And it's the time of year, and I probably use more smelly jelly or some kind of attractant, crappie niblets or something like that. There's a lot of people that go out and buy minnows all the time, and on trips I'll take minnows with me because a lot of people like to use them. But I think the crappie jigs and different methods like that are just as effective, and you don't have to get minnows out of the bucket all the time. The crappie, same thing as most of the other times of year. In the winter time, my favorite lure is just an eighth-ounce crappie jig and a 2-inch grub. Usually in the winter time, I'll use something with a single tail on it. And I don't know why that is. It just seems like I get a lot more fish on that. I think it's just, it mimics more of a shad with just a tail, and it just looks like it's dead, just floating down there. And the fish come up, and you'll feel one quick bump, and that's about all the only chance you get. And like I said, I'll put either crappie niblet sometimes or try to put some smelly jelly on it. I think that stuff helps. I don't know if it covers up my scent or the fish like garlic or whatever, but it seems to get more bumps and stuff on it. During the wintertime, you can catch crappie any place from 15 foot all the way out. Yesterday, we were finding them in 55 foot of water, and they were all the way on the bottom. So it just depends on where those shad are, and the crappie will move around, and they'll be someplace with the food. I mean, that's all they're doing out there right now is feeding. When a shad dies, and I don't know if anybody else has been to the lake, but you go over to Ruart Bluff, and there's still some ice, or at least there was this morning, some ice around the dock, and there's just gobs of dead shad that are just laying up there. In the wintertime, a lot of the shad die off, and it happens every winter. But the fish are just gorging themselves on all those shad that are falling out of the balls and stuff. So your main objective is to try to look like one of those shad and try to get your lure to look like one of those when you're fishing for them. As soon as winter's over is everybody's favorite time to fish. You know, you see the lake fill up. Everybody, my dad loved to crappie fish, and his favorite time of year was the spring, you know, during the spawn. It's probably my least favorite time because everybody's out there. The fronts come through. You got, you know, rising temperatures, falling temperatures. You got fronts coming through, raising the barometric pressure. Lake usually comes way up with all the spring rains, and then they start dragging water back down. It makes things a little bit tougher. Some things you really need to watch during the spring. If you're on fish and they are starting to make beds, you need to make sure you know where you're at on the lake as far as, I mean, if they're in 3 foot of water and you're catching spawning fish, then you get a 6 or 7 inch rain, the lake comes up 2 or 3 foot, you don't want to go back to the bank again. You don't want to keep fishing that 3 foot of water. You want to make sure you know where the old bank was and drop back off to the 3 foot where it was the day before or 2 days before, whenever that is. Because those fish, if they've already got their beds made, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to up and go find another place to spawn. They're still going to be there, and they're still going to be spawning in the same spot. So sometimes when that lake comes up 2 or 3 foot and everybody says the crappie stopped biting, I mean, always know where the old bank was, know how deep you were catching fish before, and make sure you go back to that location and try it. Make sure you're looking to mimic what you were doing before there. This is probably the easiest. Spring's the easiest time to catch crappie for the novice fisherman. I mean, you can go out there with just nothing more than like this jig and put you a strike indicator above it, which is nothing more than a bobber, but it sounds extremely good if you say a strike indicator. So you get you a strike indicator, you put it up, you know, about this far above it, and you don't need a minnow on it. You don't need a crappie nibble at this time of year. You don't need anything on it. Just cast it in there with the bobber up there, and all you're doing is just keeping this in the strike zone. So once you start catching fish and you figure out how deep those fish are out, keep that thing set and keep it, you know, sometimes it'll be 6 inches, sometimes, you know, 12, 18 inches, you know, and you just want to keep that lure in there. And all you got to do, once you get the lure casted into where, I like to parallel the bank personally. If you've only got a couple people in the boat, get your boat up there and cast down the bank in the depth the fish are, and you keep your lure in the strike zone a lot longer. And everybody knows the longer the lure's in the strike zone, the more fish you're going to end up catching. So if you can parallel the bank, that's great. If not, if you got 4 or 5 people in there with you, just cast it up to the bank and then reel it back just like you would without the bobber on there. You want to reel it back and keep the bobber. Sometimes you can pop it and stuff, and those fish will hit it just like you have a minnow on it or anything else, and it does wonders if you're fishing with kids. If you're fishing with someone who doesn't know what they're doing, it'll keep the lure out of the rocks, out of the limbs, and out of everything else, and keep you in the strike zone so much longer. You'll catch a lot more fish than if you're just casting up there getting hung up all the time. It'll really, I don't know, some old people up there at Truman taught me that years ago. I saw them using bobbers, and I figured they were minnow fishing. And when I got up there to them, they were like, oh, no, just throwing jigs, and it makes life a whole lot easier. So as much as, I mean, I hate using bobbers, it just doesn't, I don't know, it just makes you look like you know what you're doing. But if you're out there, especially if you got kids, you got someone who's getting hung up all the time, sit one on it, and you'll be surprised how many more fish you catch with that jig staying down there in the strike zone. You know, the water temps during the spring is the big factor on whether or not it's going to be pre-spawn, post-spawn, or you're in the middle of spawn. The cold fronts come through, and that'll push the fish back a little bit, or, you know, full moon comes, and sometimes they'll move up there on the full moon and things like that. But with all the fronts and things that come through in the spring, you've really got to watch the water temperature and how fast it's coming up or going down. Most of our boats, you know, have a temperature gauge on them, and that thing is only, you know, this far or this far down in the water. So you're just getting the surface temp in the water. So a lot of times you'll start reading on a hot day in the middle of April or the end of April, you know, you'll be reading 75-degree water, and everybody's like, well, the spawn's got to be over. But, you know, you stick your hand down there, and you go much past 8, 12 inches down there, and the water's still pretty cold. You know, that water will start to warm up there, and sometimes the temperature gauge on your graph will really mislead you into thinking that the spawn's already occurring or that, you know, it's already over or something because you look at the water temp, and it's just, it's way past what you think that, you know, they ought to be. But once the water is at 68, and if you're out there fishing the evening, watch your water temp at the end of the day. You know, if it starts to drop off quite a bit, and once the sun goes down, then you know that, you know, that water's not as warm as you thought it was all day. But now I lost my train of thought on what I was going to say. The most of the crop, you know, they'll be spawning up for, you know, mid-60s, 68 degrees, something in there. They'll move up, and they'll start laying their eggs and stuff. If you're catching a lot of smaller male crappie, and they're all over the banks and stuff, those females are just a little bit further out. If you're, you know, a lot of times people go up the rivers, you know, they'll be packed with people. And a lot of people will be complaining about catching smaller fish. Well, what you need to be doing is dropping off a little bit, finding your channel drop where it comes off like a little flat and then it drops off into the channel. And this can only be a 3 or 4 foot drop. It doesn't have to be that much. And then start fishing that. Hit that right there, and you can vertical jig them, you can cast up and down. You can still use the bobber method and just set the thing a little bit deeper. Set it 4 or 5 foot deep. Those bigger females and even some of the bigger males won't move up quite as fast. And I'm sure everybody's been out there in the spring, and all you can do is catch the little fish. And a lot of that's just because the bigger fish just haven't quite moved up. But they're close, they're staging, and it's not that hard to find them. But just because you're catching a lot of little crappie doesn't mean that the big fish are right there with them. The depths that you need to fish during the spawn is the pre-spawn, you can be fishing secondary points, the openings of little cuts and stuff, and there's no place to really draw. If you're coming down a bank here, and all of a sudden there's like a little cut that goes in, and it doesn't have to be that big. Both of these points, and right in the middle of that, is probably your best bet if you're fishing a pre-spawn pattern, because the fish are just staging out here, and they're waiting to come in. If you find a little brush pile out there, you might find a whole bunch of fish that are still schooled up and just waiting to come in to spawn. So make sure that, you know, I think a lot of people get hung up on the spawn, and they think if they're there, you know, we were too early this year, and they go up there, and they don't catch a lot of fish, and they try to blame it on how I was there too early. You know, some of the best fishing, I think, is, you know, before the spawn hits. You can find a lot of those big females and a lot of the bigger males and stuff out there staging to come in. And you don't have, I mean, people are always pounding the bank, and I think everybody always sees that. Everybody's casting up to the bank and trying to catch those fish that are up shallow. So make sure that you're in a position where, you know, and even if you're catching a lot of smaller fish, you're having fun, when you get up to those positions and those places where you got some secondary points or the little mouth of a cut or something where the fish could be staging, or even if you see a little pool or something when you're up in the creek, you just see a little bit deeper spot, make sure you back off and cast some in there and bring it back real slow, and I think you have some better luck catching some bigger fish. You pass down that Dr. Pepper. I'm going to get all parched before I get done with this. Thank you. So the spawning fish, you know, most of the time they're up almost, I can't believe you can't see them sometimes when you're going up through there and you're casting up there to them. And you're in a foot of water. Now you don't even see them hit. At any place from a foot deep all the way out to 6, 7, 8 foot deep. Stocking, if you get down closer to the dam and it's a really clear, you know, sometimes it can get pretty clear down there. You might want to move out to 10 foot deep. But the clarity will have some effect on how deep the fish are going to spawn and stuff. So make sure you kind of move around a little bit. Don't get stuck. You don't want to get stuck on just pounding the bank all the time. Back off a little bit. Look for your channel drops. Look for any kind of drop off, any kind of structure, secondary points, or the mouths of those cuts. And if, especially post front, if a front's come through and those fish have moved back a little bit, they'll usually go back to those kind of spots. And you can move out there and have a little bit better luck finding the fish. Well, as soon as summer's over and the the spawn's over. Let me talk about post-spawn real quick. Once the fish have spawned and they're done there, you can back out almost like a pre-spawn pattern and kind of look. Once you find the depth that they're in, you'll have a heyday with catching the fish. It's just like during the spawn. But just back off a little bit in the coves that you were catching them when they were spawning, and you can parallel cast up and down the bank and try to figure out what depth those fish are in, usually around 12 foot or so, maybe 8 foot, and they'll just hang out there and feed and be waiting for the eggs to hatch, be protecting their eggs, whatever. And you'll have a good, I mean, I've went out there after spawn's over, and everybody's saying, you know, everybody's still pounding the banks. Everybody's still casting up there with their bobber and trying to catch these spawning crappie. And, you know, they come back in and say they caught 5 all day or something. And if they'd have just backed off a little bit and tried to fish, you know, 8 to 12 foot and kept that lure, you know, just bouncing it off the bottom or whatever depth the fish are sitting in, you'll have a lot better luck and you can catch fish. Are they listening over there? You can catch fish all the time instead of just pounding the bank and catching them all the way during the spawn. Once that spring pattern's over and that's, you know, the lake's going to clear off a lot, people start going out and dropping minnows down beside trees and just sitting there all day to catch their, you know, their limit of fish. It's another time that I don't like to troll too much, but once those fish have moved out, and I'm sure, you know, anybody that's got some halfway decent electronics, you guys have driven through some coves, and you've seen, it just looks like the place is loaded with with fish. You don't know what kind they are, but the place is loaded. There's little dots all over your screen, and you're thinking, you know, what can I do to get down to them? Well, if you take, with jigs, get a lot of jigs hanging off of it, and then, now you just take yourself a little crankbait, either a Bandit 200 or 300 series. Bandit's actually come out with a crappie crankbait now, which is nothing more than a 200 or 300 series crankbait, or a flicker shad, and put those things behind your boat, troll it about 1.5 miles an hour down through there. And in fact, if the slower you troll it, I think the better luck you have. But you want to get that out there. You know, everybody talks about the lead core line and planer boards and all that. I don't. You know, I usually use 10 or 12 pound test in my bass rod, tie it on there, and put it way on back there, and just start trolling down through them, and you will catch a limit of fish. I mean, it's if you're in the right spot and you see those fish on your screen, if you're not catching them, do something. I mean, change from a Bandit to a flicker shad, and that's usually the two I use. I mean, I very seldom go to any other lure whenever I'm trolling for them, but either a Bandit 200 or 300 series, depending on how deep the fish are. And then the flicker shad comes in a couple, 3 different sizes. And you just troll down through there, you know, I think it's usually about 1.4 miles an hour is what my screen shows. And I usually just use my trolling motor. I got the remote control trolling motor. It's got the little paths you can draw. And you can just hit start and start going, and it just trolls you down through them. And it's an easy way to catch fish. I've got, in fact, on my website, the kid that I'm standing beside and we're holding up the fish, that's how he caught that. He was just trolling. And biggest thing you got to remember when you're doing that is watch your rod tip. Number one, make sure it's still got the action in it, because the crankbait will be down there, you know, wiggling back and forth, and you'll see your rod tip doing the same thing. If you don't have that, you either got grass on your line, you're tangled up somehow, or you got a fish on it. I mean, sometimes, I don't care if it's 12-inch, 13-inch crappie, sometimes those things grab that thing, and if you don't feel the initial bite, you don't even know there's fish on it, because you're dragging, and you got a motor dragging this poor little crappie back there, and they'll just drag along with it, and you can be out there for quite some time, so you need to make sure you still got the action. If you got a nice sensitive rod, you can feel the crankbait down there working, but trolling for them in the summertime, post-spawn, up until, in the July sometime, they'll start spreading out, start going to... or maybe in June, you'll see they'll start kind of vacating the middle of the coves and stuff, and you don't see them all stacked up in there, and then they'll start heading for cover. But I think a lot of people go out post-spawn and head right for the brush piles, and you'll catch some fish. You'll always catch some crappie on those brush piles. They're there. But if you want to go out there and consistently catch a lot of nice crappie, the trolling with the crankbaits is definitely the way to do it. I mean, it's...
When you're trolling the guts of the coves... even into June, very high high percentage of the fish we'll catch will still have spawn in them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why that is?
Because they didn't let them out.
Right. But, okay.
I thought that was a good answer. No, basically, you know, crappie
is
almost...
Is percentage that spawn?
Well, no, I think a lot of it's crappie don't have... I mean, they don't have muscles. You know, when a mammal has a baby, you know, they have muscles and they contract and they put, we don't want to go into all that. But anyways, the crappie don't. The crappie just drop their eggs out and then, you know, onto the bed. Most of the time, you're going to find female crappies. They do have eggs in them. Everybody wants to argue all the time about the winter spawn. There's people, I got people in my family that just say I'm stupid because I don't think there's a fall spawn. You know, doesn't matter.
So they just drop some of them? Probably.
Yeah, they just drop some of them. They don't. And some of them might not spawn. You know, the weather and stuff pushed them back. You know, and they still, they just never did it. Or they're going to spawn out in deeper water or something that, you know. You know, I don't know if there's any way to really prove any theory right on that, but I've asked the same question to some biologists, and his answer was they don't have muscles to push all their eggs out, and, you know, they drop their eggs, and they're always regrowing eggs. I mean, you always see them in the fall, in the winter, in the summer. They've always got eggs in them, and they throw their eggs, they reabsorb them, and they just goes in a cycle, and then... whenever the spawn comes around, they let which ones I guess they want go. So that's it.
You got
a birthing class.
When you're trolling, are you following creek channels or what kind of structure?
Not necessarily. I usually see what depth the fish are in. There are times when if I go out on the main lake and the fish will be stacked up on a channel, you know, just outside the channel or something, I'll try to stay in there close to it. But for the most part, it's a depth. You know, you go back into Gouger or something like that, and you'll see just gobs of fish just stacked up in 30, 40 foot of water. Sometimes they'll be out in 50 foot, and they'll just be 20 foot down. And you just got to make sure that you can get down to that 20 foot. And, you know, like I said, I think the biggest... Do what? No talking in class, please. But the biggest thing is trying to keep your lure down there in that 20 foot. And you know, I don't even like trolling, but, you know, you go out there and I tell you, very seldom you catch small fish.
It puts fish in the boat.
I mean, yeah, it puts fish in the boat and it's easy. I mean, people go out on trips, they want to catch fish, and there's nothing more frustrating than going on a brush pile and planting 100 jigs in a day. And, you know, that's what happens a lot of times. So, you know, when they're out there like this and you can go out and you can catch some walleye while you're doing it, I don't catch as many walleye as I think I should doing it. I never troll for the walleye, but we catch a few walleye on it, and you'll catch bass. I mean, there's never a dull moment on it. I mean, when the fish are out there, you can catch fish all day. So, yeah, go ahead.
How do you keep your crankbait down to, say, 20 feet?
You know, it all has to do with how far you let it out, how big the bill in the crankbait is, how big your line is, and and the speed you're going. So if you're wanting to go out there 20 foot, what your best bet, you know, because I don't have a whole bunch of trolling stuff to do it. I don't use lead core line, but marking your line, knowing how far you are out there and varying that until you start getting hit, and then keeping it there. Mark your line after, you know, if you get your first hit, mark your line with a marker or something, and then you'll know how far you are out, and you just keep going that far out. And if you get back out there and you don't catch a fish in 5 or 10 minutes, you need to remark your line and, you know, maybe bring it up a little bit or bring it back out. You know, I've got some people that go out there with me to troll, and they'll go, I mean, so far out there, it's like when they catch a fish, it takes them 5 minutes to get it back in. And that's fine. They catch fish, though, and they do it. So, you know, it just kind of depends. You just kind of got to play it. But if you're using a 6-pound test or 8-pound test, it's going to go deeper than if you're using 10 or 12-pound test. Or is that opposite? No, that's right. Yeah, it's going to go deeper if you're using a lighter weight test. So if you're using the lead core line, then you don't have to go out as far because that's going to weight it. It's like a weighted line, and you can take it down and do it that way. And that would probably make it easier to get to a depth and not have to go out so far. I mean, sometimes I'm out 40 yards behind the boat. And then the biggest problem with doing that, I mean, you know, you got a crankbait, you got a boat that's moving a 1.5 mile an hour, and a fish with a paper mouth. And once you set the hook, and you start reeling it in, you've really got to be careful with it because you will lose a lot of fish if you don't. Usually what I do whenever I get a fish, I'll either stand up or get the rod tip up, and I'll try to bring the fish up to the top of the water and then just kind of skeet across the top of the water so that his head's kind of up, because if you just sit there and fight him and fight him, it'll rip their mouth out pretty quick. And even those big, I mean, the bigger they are, the more weight they got. And I've seen some big 13 or 14 inch crappie come up beside the boat, and they get off as soon as you give them a little bit of slack because they got a hole this big in them. So make sure you fight them appropriately whenever you're bringing them in. Any more crankbait questions?
What color do you like, though?
You know, I don't know if it really matters. I mean, I've got a Mad Cow that I really like, and I think it's because the name of it. I mean, you can say that you caught him on a Mad Cow. The Flicker Shad, I mean, anything with a little bit of blue in it, something like that, and, you know, something that mimics a shad, some shark, or some silver on the back or something. But I've always had a hard time convincing myself when you're out there in 20-foot of water, 25-foot of water, and you're cruising it at a mile and a half an hour, a fish looks up and thinks that's the wrong color. So, I mean, there are times when, you know, I've been out fishing, someone else uses a different color, I've only got one of them, and then, you know, 20 minutes later, I start catching some. I think it's just, you can use whatever color you really got, and you're going to catch fish out there when you're dragging it through them. Like I said, Mad Cow, and I can't even think of the other color. I mean, the Fire Tiger is always a good color, too. Something that's got the chartreuse with the stripes on it and things like that. But anything that mimics the color of a shad is always good. And then I personally just like some blue and chartreuse in mine. I don't know, I think they just look neat. But I don't know if it necessarily really helps that much.
Bob. Back to jig fishing. Does color matter in the pre-spawn and post-spawn when you're jig fishing?
You know, it does. I mean, you know, there's times when they're in that shallow of water that color can make a difference. You know, when you're fishing 30 foot down, or you're fishing at night or something, you know, you hear people say, "I was night fishing, they don't hit on a red." Maybe they got different eyes than me. I don't know, but I couldn't see if it was red. But during the spawn, when you're up that shallow, I like some with some chartreuse in it or all white. And it seems like, you know, you get a few more bites. And there's, and you can't find these things too often anymore, but my cousin, I can't say he's the best fisherman in the world, but he fished with that little tomato and chartreuse Roadrunner. And that is, I mean, that thing kills them up there during the spawn on Stockton. Only problem is they're about $2 a piece now. So it's like, you know, I just start making my own because things get expensive after a while. But, you know, the colors up there as far as during the spawn, and that tomato and chartreuse, I haven't seen anything catch more than that during the spawn. But if you're just throwing just a jig without a spinner on it, something, I said the bubblegum and chartreuse is good, all white, or something like this, like that triple ripple with the blue and gray in it or something. Always seems to work out pretty good. I use a lot of triple ripples during the spawn, or I just pour my own because they're getting so expensive. I mean, you can pour your own jigs for about a tenth of what, I mean, just like these right here. During the winter time, it's kind of dirty, but just something right there with a single tail, and that's all it is, just a little piece of rubber that we melted and poured into a jig or into a mold, and you make about 10 of them at a time. They cost you probably less than a penny a piece. Whereas you go out and buy the things, and they're up to 30 cents a piece on these little things. You go buy a 10-pack, and, you know, it's outrageous what you spend anymore. Someone else had a question over here, I thought, and then you got one.
If you had to pick a two-week window, I know every year is different because of the winter, like this year is different and so on, but if you had to pick a two-week window to catch spawning crappie on Stockton with all your years of experience, what 2 weeks would that be?
April 15th to the 1st of May. I'd say that. Usually after the 1st of May, it seems to start slowing down a little bit. And before, I mean, last year in March, we were catching, I don't think they were really spawning. I think they were just up feeding and getting ready for it. Until that snow hit, we were catching them up in 3 foot of water nonstop. And then that snow hit, and, I mean, they just disappeared. And I don't know what kind of spawn they had last year. I mean, I guess we'll know in a couple of years. But It was tough after that snow came through.
Since you've done a little fishing up there, especially in the winter, do you find that the schools of shad tend to group in the same places year after year?
Yeah, for the most part, they do. Once you start finding the shad, and everybody probably knows State Park. I mean, they've at least heard people catch crappie out of there. There's schools of shad in there. There's tire piles and stuff. There's always shad there every year. And there's some other coves around it that every year I go in, there's shad in there.
Yeah, they like the cove mouths real well.
Yeah.
How about river channels?
River channels, you can find them in the – I don't catch a lot of crappie in them in the river channels as I do back in the coves and like the little creek, the feeder channels and stuff that are coming out. Usually between 30 and 50 foot of water and fish that and stay on the shad in those.
Second question, since Stockton is south-north running lake, do you find that the crappie start to spawn earlier, say Aldrich, CC, than they do at the dam?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's...
Water temperature,
and it's, I don't think it's so much because it's north and south as much as it's just shallower water warms faster. It also cools faster.
Right.
So if you're fishing up around CC and you're on spawning crappie and your deepest water's 8 or 10 foot around and a huge front comes in, or the water muddies up and stuff, your fish are going to be tough. I mean, the water's rising, it's getting muddy, and it's going to make it tough for catching those fish. If you're down closer to some, you know, something with access to some deeper water, you can back off a little bit easier and start catching those fish that are out there.
What about on bright days or cloudy days? Does that make any difference?
That's why I do a split day trip. You can catch fish out there, I mean, all the time. But on a bright, sunny day, it does affect the fish. You usually have to move a little bit deeper. You have to find some shade. I mean, those fish don't want to just be out there with no cover. And all that bright sun, the water's clear, you know. And so you want to find some cover and find something with some shade. I mean, walleye fishing, you know, I'll switch gears to walleye real quick. If you're out there on a sunny day and you're looking for a walleye, you want to find something with some shade. I don't care if it's a ledge. You know, if you see a big ledge coming over and the sun's over here shooting down, then there's a good possibility there's going to be a walleye sitting right in there in the shade. You find a log that's laying on the bottom, you want to get on the shady side of it. Same thing with the crappie. I mean, if the sun's beating down and you find a brush pile and it's got fish on it, fish the shady side of it. When it's high noon and the sun's coming straight down, and it makes it tough. And there's not a cloud in the sky. I mean, it's tough on everybody, too. So you just got to hold it out. I think another big mistake everybody makes, I mean, 9 o'clock, you see the ramps full of people putting the boat in, and everybody's leaving at 3 or 4 o'clock griping because they didn't catch any fish. And, you know, they're missing the two best times of day. And, you know, you're going to catch fish during the middle of the day, but it does slow down. And the bright sun and the clear sky does not help it at all. So.
Along with that.
Yeah.
Those fish gonna seek that water to warm up.
Yeah, they will usually look at the water. It's on the east side, and I never get my directions right. You know, the sun's setting over there in the west, and the it's been shining over on the east bank all day. That and the north banks, whichever one's got the sun beating on it more all day, is going to warm a little bit more, especially on a calmer day, you know, where the water's not getting mixed up by the wind. You know, that can make a little bit of a difference. I mean, one degree makes a huge difference sometimes on the activity of the fish. And you can fish one side and you get to another spot and all of a sudden you find fish that are active, and it can make a difference, just a little bit of water temperature. So yeah, you want to keep an eye on that. You know, for a 2 or 3 week period there, it does change things a little bit.
This spawning temperature you're talking about, mid-60s, that's at the spawning depth, right?
Yes.
That's not surface depth.
No, that's not surface
depth. You're going to have some way of measuring that.
Yeah, you know, my dad used to carry a thing, you know, he'd drop down on a string down there.
You can't find those things
anymore.
Yeah,
but, you know, you can put just any kind of thermometer in a little plastic tube and drop it down, you know, with the lid on it, and make sure you tie a string on it. And drop it down and pull it back out. Well, I've done that kind of stuff, so. drop an anchor over, and you're like, anchor's down. So it can happen. So, but yeah, you do want the temperature of the spawning area, you know. And I usually just look at it after the sun set in the evening. You know, you got a half hour window there. The sun's set, and it's not getting dark yet. I keep a good eye on what the temperature is then, and see how much it drops off, and then I kind of give you an idea. If you get out there first thing in the morning, you get an idea of what the actual water temperature is, because it's not going to stay. You know, you'll always have a little thermocline going up and down in there, but it's not going to stay that big of a change, you know, in 18 inches of water or something.
In the winter fishing, like right now, I've never tried it, but I got a lot of guys telling me to use spoons when you find the shad, drop a spoon into it.
Yeah, there's
a... I've been on top of shad balls and not gotten a bite, and it just drives you crazy because your fish finder's going nuts.
Yeah.
They're not biting on anything, it seems.
You know, those fish that are underneath the shad will bite on something. If you are in the right depth, and there's fish underneath the shad, they're going to bite on something. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm always going to catch them, but somebody's going to pull up in there, and they're going to drop a lure down there, and they're going to catch them fish. Or they're there for one reason, that's to feed. And
just a little spoon.
I don't. I've fished with spoons before, and it's an excellent lure, but I don't do it a lot on Stockton. Mainly more, you know, you got 4 or 5 people in the boat, you don't have anybody winging spoons all over the place, because, you know, well, you've seen them. Well, you do, but people start winging stuff. They'll wing stuff, yeah. It's not always holding, you know. They'll wing stuff. But, no, the spooning is a good way to catch fish in the shad. It's a good way to catch some walleye that are down the shad, too. Usually, when you find those crappie that are in the shad, there's usually some walleye around there, too. You know, it's been a couple of years ago. We used to go out and catch a limited crappie, and then we'd sit there and continue to fish and just try to catch some more walleye. Because we'd catch one or two while we were fishing, and might as well just, you know, instead of going home, nothing to do at home. So you just stay out there and keep doing that. But, yeah, the spoon's is another excellent lure to use. I don't do it a lot, but I've done it before, and it works pretty good.
So you would just say continue to try a different jig?
Yes, I would change. I mean, if you got to change colors, do something that's gonna up your confidence level. I mean, if it's putting a jig on and trying something different, if it's changing jig colors, putting two jigs on, you know, usually what I'll do is put an 1/8 ounce on the bottom so it's a little bit heavier, and then put a 1/16 ounce up top a little bit so they don't get hung up quite as much, and drop two of them down there. You're in a little bit different depth. And you can try two different colors at once, and it'll sometimes you'll catch two fish at once.
Do you use those jigs doing that, like
crappie jig? Yeah, I just use these crappie jigs like...
Do you have the extra line on it, or you just tie...
Oh, no, I just tie it on there.
Right,
I just tie a polymer knot or something on it, and they hit it. You know, I'm only using 4-pound test in the wintertime, 6 at the absolute most. So, you know, the lighter line, I think the more bites you're going to get. And you know, I've proved that to myself. I firmly believe that people go out there and 10 or 12 pound, and people always tell you, I've caught a crappie on 12 pound test. Well, sure you have, but you know, it's not going to be a consistent thing. It's not going to be all the time. You know, I've caught a big crappie on a spinner bait, but I'm not going to go out there and throw a spinner bait all day for crappie. So, you know, you want to go and get some, you know, the fluorocarbon line's great. It's a little bit expensive, but it does. You don't see it as much in the water, and people go out and buy these bright lines and stuff too, so they can see it. You know, you need to make sure the fish can't see it. You know, I'm saying that that fluorescent line's bad or anything, but if the fish can see it, then you're defeating your purpose. Because you know, if you were sitting in your living room, a steak come down to the ceiling, and it had a rope on it, you probably wouldn't be as apt to eat it if it just fell on your lap. So. I'd still eat it.
Well, I know you have a tremendous amount of spots you can just pull up to and know what's under the water and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But do you still use your GPS very much?
All the time. Because I've got, you know, I was talking earlier about pounding the banks. You get everybody, you go out there, and people are all over the banks fishing. And they're casting up the bank and bringing it back, casting up the bank, bringing it back. And they do that all day long. I personally like to go out, find a flat, find something that comes out, gets close to the channel and drops off, and it can be out in the middle of the lake. And without GPS, it makes it difficult to get on top of some of those things. I mean, I depend on it quite a bit to just go out there and park yourself right on top of a brush pile that's out in 30 foot of water in the middle of the lake, and everybody thinks you're walleye fishing or something. And
one other question about that. The spots that you look at on a map where they say the brush piles are, how accurate are they as far as the GPS coordinates go?
If you set your GPS correctly, you know, there's three or four different patterns that you can put the GPS, the dot, the hour, the seconds, and all that. If you do it the way they've got it in theirs, then it's within 5-10 foot. If you've got it different, well, then, yeah, it's gonna make it different. I've had people say that theirs won't take the GPS coordinates and stuff. Usually there's a setting in there, and it'll show the format that you're putting the GPS coordinates, and it'll transfer over to what they've got. If not, programs and stuff online that you can transfer the stuff over and get the correct GPS coordinates. I use a lot of the conservation department has done a wonderful job with Stockton sinking brush piles. Some of them don't have signs on them, and those are the ones I usually fish. If I fish them, it's the ones that don't have signs, because you can tell, I mean, the ones that have signs, everybody's on it. You can go up, pull up, and catch small crappie, but you know, everybody always wants to know why there's no bigger crappie on the spots, because everybody kept them. I mean, anybody who catches a 10-inch crappie is probably going to keep it. Not too many people go out and catch and release crappie. So you want to go to the places that aren't hit, that don't have the pressure and don't have all their keeper fish taken all the time, and you'll catch bigger fish. So go out there and find those spots, those brush piles the conservation's put out. And while you're looking for them, you'll come across a lot of other spots. And be ready to hit mark on your GPS every time you do it. Because if you just cruise the bank, you know, go out in 30 foot of water and you just start driving the bank, you'll come across more stuff in that lake than you've ever thought you'd come across. And people have dropped stuff. And I put out some PVC stuff this winter. And hopefully it's marked right, because you can't hardly pick that stuff up. But, you know, you mark all that stuff and keep it on there, and you'll find some excellent spots to crappie fish.
Do crappie travel or migrate large distances, or do they pretty much stay in one area of the year round?
You know, like lake to lake? Or?
No.
Not large distances, I mean. But, yeah, they do migrate. I mean, they're gonna move.
From the water to the grease.
Yeah, they go from my boat to the frying pan, and down the highway sometimes. They'll move some. I haven't read a whole lot on how far they will travel. You know, everybody goes way up the rivers and stuff to fish for them, or, you know, in the feeder creeks and stuff like that, in the little cuts. After the spawn's over, you know, they obviously move out of those spots, and you can usually go to the nearest deeper water or nearest brush or drop off or something and start catching them there. But I don't know how far single crappie, if it would travel. Yeah, I don't have a clue.
What about barometric pressure? Does it seem to affect crappie?
Yes. The deeper fish, no. I mean, if you can get on deeper fish, it doesn't affect it as much. But when you're out there in the spring, that's why, you know, I was saying spring is the toughest fishing. You're up there and you're catching fish one day in 3 foot of water, and a front comes through, and the next day you can't get bit. You know, the barometric pressure has a whole lot to do with that, the storms and the rise and lower in water and all that. So you want to fish accordingly. If you're, you know, you go up to like 39 up Suns Creek by 39 Bridge, you know, there's some deeper pockets up there that you can back off and hit some spots and try to keep catching those same fish, and they just backed off a little bit. Sometimes it'll just be that they just slow down, and you know, their metabolism slows down or whatever, and they don't need to eat. And you've got to get in there and try to get them to respond to whatever it is you're throwing.
Well, I've always heard in Stockton, if you want to catch fish, you need to fish the windy banks. Is that whole true?
Well,
not so much.
I think any lakes like that, I think the wind will make fish more active. It blows in bait or whatever you want to say. It blows stuff in. The fish get more active. The ripples on top of the water, they don't have the visibility to see, you know, as much. That cuts down some of the light. So, yeah, I mean, that does have some bearing on it. But, the same time, you can go to the other bank and catch some too, but they might be out a little deeper if it's nice and calm. You know, they might not be as apt to chase something, but it's just...
Probably sitting on a brush pile in 20 feet of water probably ain't going to make a lot of difference to them. I'm thinking.
No.
If they're responding, if they moved into the bank and spawning, would they be more apt to buy with the wind blowing in or with no wind blowing in? Or does it really make a...
If they're in spawning, I don't think it makes a whole lot of a difference. You know, a little bit of a breeze is fine, but you get to where there's white capping and stuff, and I'm going to go to the other side. Because I'll fight the harder fish.
Talk about the barometer. Do you know of a good website that a guy can go to where he can select a locale and find out what the barometer is for the day, if it's going up or down or what? Because I always find lake temperature and all that, but I'm finding the barometers and then coming in.
I think it is... I'm going to be on Bodacious Outdoors. That wasn't what I was looking at, though. Let's see. NOAA radar. I think it's got all that on there.
Well, they're underground sometimes.
Where in the world? I don't know how to use
it's
this
got the
dinking
pressure
thing.
On there. There's not actually pressure forecast, per se.
It's got a wind warning.
Weather.gov's got good forecast maps. Doesn't have the exact pressure.
They've also got your point and click where you can just click right on a stock and it's going to give you a specific forecast for that point.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with this thing. I don't know, it's a piece of junk. Okay. NOAA radar, I think that's what it's called. That's what I was using. But Weather Underground is a good one. I've used it before, and weather.gov has some good stuff on it. But like Weather Channel and stuff, you need to look up some apps, and some of them have some really good things.
But show you the barometric pressure at that time, not rising, falling.
Yeah, usually if you see the barometric pressure, it should have an R or an F or an arrow or something right next to it showing if it's rising or falling. As far as seeing, I bored someone out of here.
Let's go fishing.
You gonna go catch them?
Yeah, we got to figure it out,
man. Okay, well, good luck. But yeah, that's a good thing if you kind of got to track sometimes, you know. But I don't know of anything that shows it like the day before and the next day and what, you know, all that. I usually just look to see if it's rising or falling, and that's it. But usually it's having an arrow by it, and that's just what I go off of.
You do believe that the rising barometer?
Yes, I think it does make a difference on the shallower fish. You know, shallow fish will usually bite. If you get up there and you throw something at them, they're usually going to bite. But a front comes through or something, they're going to pull back, and then they've got lockjaw. I mean, it's tougher to catch them. That's why it's always good if you have some deeper spots that you can hold fish on. During the spawn, sometimes that's tough, you know, because all the fish are shallow. But try to get up there and find some spots where there's some deeper fish too. So if you get stuck out there and there's a front coming through, you can get up there and still try to catch some fish and stuff. I think someone had one over.
You mentioned your website earlier. What's the name of it?
FishStocktonLake.com. And that, I try to keep up on a fishing report on it. And hopefully my new phone, this iPhone, I don't know. It doesn't.
Your spell check doesn't work, do it?
Man, that's voice text. That's when I get out there and I just try to do it while, you know, on voice. And at one time it said, like, they were hitting on kids instead of jigs. So sometimes you'll have to...
They frown on that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Sometimes you'll have to look at that and decipher a few things, because sometimes it doesn't always come out right. And I don't proofread it good enough.
Building on the pressure thing, what I hear you saying is behind the fronts, you tend to find it a little tougher. Ahead of the fronts, what's been your experience? And then when there's a system of high pressure, a system of low pressure settled over, what's been your experience?
Yeah, high pressure is usually toughest to me. I you know, you got to slow things down, and you know, usually you got a high sun, and with the high pressure and stuff, it makes it for tough fishing. But low pressure doesn't seem to affect them as much, you know, whenever I'm fishing for them, at least. But yeah, ahead of the front, I think the fish feed a lot more. I was sitting on Smithville, and it's probably the best example I've got of a pre-front fish going off. But we were sitting there. I had a couple kids that wanted to go fishing, so I took them up catfishing. And we were fishing the old Trimble Dam, and we were catching them. I mean, you'd cast out, and you'd have a catfish in 5 minutes. I mean, they were hitting just nonstop. You could hear the front coming down the lake, the wind coming, the rain coming, and we were catching fish, and we reeled them in, and the front came through, rained for 2-3 minutes, and we cast it back out, never got another bite. I mean, it was the only thing different was the front came through. And there's a catfish. I mean, they're a little bit, they were a little bit deeper and stuff, but when a big front comes through and something like that happens, I've had the same thing with even just thunder. Seems like, I don't know if that scares me or what, but sometimes a lot of thunder overnight, and the next morning, it's tough to catch fish. And once, I don't know if they, just get over it or whatever, and fishing gets a little bit easier. But, there's some little things like that that do affect them. But pre-front, you fish in front of the front, then I think you do better than fishing behind it.
And when low pressure settled over, you'd say that's a little bit better fishing.
Yeah, then you can go back to, they'll chase more stuff, they'll, you can use bigger lures, High pressure seems like you just got to finesse everything, and that goes for crappie, bass, walleye, everything. So, someone else had a question someplace over here. All right, well, never mind then. Okay.
It's not quite on fishing, Bob, but it's about you.
No, I didn't do it.
Have you sold down any on your motorcycle?
No. I got rid of it. I sold it to the insurance company.
How would you get another one?
So,
do
what?
You didn't get another one?
No, I can't. That one goes up pretty good now. This one only goes up about that high. So, and I was headed to church, so, you'd think, and I had stayed on there. But,
I got one more question.
All right.
I've got a GPS, and I had some coordinates from, I think it was the Army Corps or whoever put out the brush pile coordinates. How long do those brush piles hold true, or do they deteriorate, or do they move, or do you have to wipe them clean and start over?
Comes down to a lot of what kind of wood they used, how good they tied it up, who's the yahoo that threw an anchor in the middle of it, didn't want to lose their anchor, so they took off backwards and drug it,
So how long do you keep?
If I go on to one and I find that it's, the thing's gone, I've got one that I was catching limits of crappie on 3 years ago, and I still got it on there, but I can't find the stinking brush pile. I've been over my side imager and went back and forth. If I don't find it this year, I'll probably go put another one in there because it was so good.
Do they collapse, though? I've seen them where they're gone, but there's still something.
Well, you're going to have, down at the bottoms, the trunks and all that. So, they usually put the Christmas trees out there. They got huge bundles of them, and you got some pretty thin limbs coming off of them, and a lot of times those things will get broke off and they'll just rot away, and then you got the trunks and stuff down there, which will still hold fish. They're still going to hold fish down there. All you need is, they don't know the difference between PVC, a tree with a bunch of limbs, or just a tree trunk. They're just looking for some cover. So just because you don't see as much, it doesn't mean the fish aren't still there. I mean, they could still be down there inside the cover and stuff.
You said PVC got. Has it been your experience that PVC holds a crappie in Stockton as well as cedar? General involvement.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, PVC.
You
don't get snagged up in it. Usually takes a little bit longer because you got to get some growth on it, and that stuff needs to, algae
down,
and stuff.
If you sand it down, that algae will.
It'll probably hold to it a little bit better. It's a better way to do it all around. I mean, if you can find somebody who's a plumber or something that's doing a whole bunch of new job, I mean, grab it all. Call me, I'll come pick it up, because then I can tell you where I dump it, 20 foot off. Then I can pull up next to you while you're fishing. Oh, no, it's over here. But, no, I like the PVC stuff. Even those guys that are bass fishermen and stuff, you can take some small PVC and go up and make you something in the shallow water. And drop it off and go back and fish it, and have yourself some places that you can go hit and catch some bass and stuff. So it's I like the PVC. The best thing is not getting hung up in it.
Right.
So.
On the PVC, on the side of it, does it show up as well as wood does?
No, it does not. I've got a couple of them out right now, and they do show up, but you've really got to be – you got to do some adjustment, your sensitivity, change the color, I can't remember what color I use now, but there's some things, there's some settings you can do to make it show up a little bit, but it doesn't show up. Where you put it, you want to mark it, make sure you got it on, and whenever you drop it, make sure you put it beside your antenna, your GPS antenna. If you drop it off the back of the boat and your antenna's on the front of the boat or vice versa, you're going to be 20 foot off of it when you go back. And 20 foot can make a huge difference. And when you're 20 foot off of it, I mean, you don't know which way you got to cast it. And so you want to make sure you're dropping it beside the antenna. It makes a huge difference. But just have confidence the stuff's there and fish it and try it because it works pretty good.
Does your sonar pick it up as well?
No, it doesn't. I mean, when the grass starts growing on it, if you've got more sensitive unit, then yes, some of that will pick it up. I mean, I can see my 16-inch jig down there, so it's going to pick some of it up, but it does not pick it up like it does lumber and trees and stuff. I like doing it someplace close to a channel drop, someplace just close to a ledge or something, or just off of the ledge, depending on what the depth is, and someplace away from where everybody else is going to be. You know, if you go out there and you put a brush pile on a point at Stockton and you start catching crappie on it, you can bet within a couple of weeks everybody else is going to be up there fishing. If you go out in the middle of the lake and you find a hump or a flat that comes out, you know, 200 or 300 yards and drop down a brush pile out there in 30 foot of water, people don't know what you're doing and they can't, you know, they got to come back over it and mark it in order to see it. So I personally like getting away from all those people. And man, the crappie you catch. You know, they use crappie and all the fish. They use a creek channel just like we do the highways. You know, we go up and down 44 or whatever to go to St. Louis. When you get halfway there, you get tired, you pull off and you find a hotel. You think of it the same way as you're driving up, you know, the fish is driving up the highway and he looks over and there's a nice log cabin. You know, he's going to go in there and take a little nap or feed or do whatever, and it, you know, it's just kind of a different way to look at it. But the fish are gonna be hanging out there before they continue on their trek, or they're gonna live there or whatever. You know, they're depending on how far they go because we don't know. but yeah, you know, you look at it kind of from that point of view. But if you will get your brush piles and whatever cover you put and get them away from the bank, you'll probably have better luck going out and catching fish on them. And that's all the way for if you fish up around Aldridge and you come back down there and find, you know, you can follow the creek channels and you can see, you know, the creek channel curves way around and a flat comes all the way out to it. You know, put it right there where the creek channel circles around it and put you a bunch of brush right there and you'll have a lot better luck than if you put it up close. And you won't have the lots of people fishing it either. You're always going to have some, but... I don't use much braided line. You know, you usually straighten out the hooks and stuff with it, which some people, my dad loved that. He didn't have to retie, but he'd have hooks in his hand and everything trying to straighten it out, but he never had to retie it. But I don't use much braided line. I use the fluorocarbon or P-line. Usually use P-line more than anything. It's, you know, 4 or 6 pound and works just fine.
I know it's labeled.
Oh. How large an area when you build one do you make?
Completely depends on where it's at. If I think everybody else is going to find it and everybody's going to be fishing it, I won't spend as much time on it. If it's someplace that I think I can keep and just take customers to and stuff and not have to be fighting with people, you know, and everybody else coming up in there, I'll try to make it pretty big. You know, if you got 4 people in your boat, it's 20-foot boat, you gotta have it at least big enough that everybody's gonna be catching fish on it. So you gotta spread it out some. But you know, even if you just, you know, a lot of times, I use my phone. You know, if this right here's the area you're gonna put it in, you put brush piles on each corner and kind of box the whole thing in, and then you can just kind of move around and keep fishing and keep it going. So it just depends on how much time you want to spend on it. I don't think it, you know, you can drop down one evergreen tree or one hedge tree. I like using hedge because it lasts a lot longer. I mean, it'll stay down there for years. But if you just drop down one and you're in the right spot, it's going to hold fish. It's going to keep attracting fish, and you can go someplace else and drop 20 trees. If you don't do it in the right spot, it ain't going to hold no fish. or at least not, you know, the quality of fish that, that you're looking for. So you really want to, you know, and I'll add to them, you know, if I've got one that, that is catching a lot of fish, like the one that's gone to that point, you know, as much as I don't like putting them on points, I also know that I go out there and catch unlimited fish all the time. So I need to do something, PVC or something on that point to get it to hold fish again, because I'm not catching anything on it now. So.
Okay, on Table Rock, I know in the wintertime, you can catch a lot of crappie on the mud flats that aren't particularly deep, 14, 12, 15, 18 foot deep, as long as there's a
in the wintertime, you say?
Yeah,
okay.
As long as there's a creek channel or something close to it.
Yep.
Now, do you find that you can catch the crappie in Stockton and mud flats? Because they do warm up. Mud flats
yep.
will tend to warm up quicker.
Yeah, post-spawn I do more than pre-spawn. I'll catch a lot of crappie. Last year I caught a lot of crappie walleye fishing with just a jig head and a half a night crawler, and we were catching some big crappie. And those were usually on flats or just off the flats and, you know, wherever the walleye were hanging out.
Right. Seems to me to need some deep water close
yeah,
by.
Yeah, the crappie, I mean, all fish really like that deep, you know, the access to it gives them safety. So, you know, if you're closer to a creek channel, you try to stay in that area, I think you'll have better luck. And you'll catch bigger fish. Oh.
You mess much with the timber?
You know, not a whole lot. Standing timber, I don't. Again, you get a lot of people go up there. A lot of people drown minnows all around them. I like staying out there where less people fish, and I think you get a better quality of fish. You can go up to the standing timber, and you can get limits of fish, and you can catch some really nice fish. Don't get me wrong. It's an excellent place to crappie fish. I personally just like to stay away from, you know, when they're in the standing timber, everybody goes up there and they're tied up to trees and everything. And, you know, it's relaxing, but I'd rather go out and find some of the brush piles I put out that everybody else hasn't fished and be able to go out there. And I think you got a better chance of catching that 15-inch crappie because it hadn't had the pressure.
You know.
You can't cut them on the core land. Have I ever been caught cutting them on the core land? Never caught. You can't cut them off the core land. You can get you can drag dead trees out. They told me, you know, that's not a big deal. And there's plenty of dead ones, so there's no need to chance, you know, getting in trouble for it. No, Stockton, not yet, not that I've heard at least.
It's a $100 permit for some of them.
Yeah. Yeah, Stockton does not require it. You do have to make sure that it's below the 10 foot below normal pool or something and make sure it's you know, you can't be hit by the skiers and all that stuff. So, but you know, you just got to do it smart and safe.
You mentioned catching crappie on a jig head and a night crawler. How will you fish in that? What does it look like?
I mean, it looked. What did the crappie look like?
You set up for the walleye, but you said you were catching night crappie on it.
Yeah, you just, I mean, a jig head. Yeah, you're trying to figure out how to catch walleye, aren't you? I see where this is going. No, you just take that jig head, and you take a half an eye crawler, and you make sure you kind of thread it up on so it comes back down to here, and then I usually hook it a second time just to hold it on a little bit better. But you want the night crawler hanging straight off of it, so it's just hanging almost like a plastic worm. But your hook's exposed, and just drop it down there.
My question is, how are you fishing that?
Oh,
that you got the crappie.
That I was walleye fishing. I was just out there. It was on the bottom, and I was just dragging it around the boat. Behind the boat.
Not trolling.
No, just I mean, you know, some people want to call it trolling. I mean, I wasn't even registered on the speed. I mean, I hit the trolling motor every once in a while, and we move just a little bit, but it's really just kind of floating out there and bouncing the worm around, and that's about it.
These jig heads here, I notice you've got red ones and black ones there. Is there a reason?
I think the red ones look cool.
I think they look cool, too, but.
I mean,
Are they worth the, I think they're a little more expensive.
Which one would you hit?
Well, I don't like hitting them at all. Awesome.
No, I think that the red ones, I think the customers like them a lot more.
Okay. Confidence thing? Or?
Yeah. It's this right here is the sickle hook. They came out, I don't know, a couple years back. But that's supposed to hold fish a little bit better, and they don't come off as easy.
I've got some on
them. You know, I don't know. You guys can pass some of those around and look at the sickle hooks. But, you know, I don't paint the jig heads. Everybody, you know, talks about painting them and all that kind of stuff. But those right there are all sickle hooks.
And what about trolling motor noise? When you're fishing straight down, do you think that the trolling motor spooks fish? Probably.
You know, I usually have mine on really slow then, or I have it on anchor, so it's doing it itself.
Okay.
But if you're fishing
the wind, trying to stay on something, and you have to...
Yeah, you know, I think there is some effect on it. I mean, I think I catch more fish, whether it's more fish that are active, or whether or not the trolling motor spooks some off.
Yeah.
Who knows? But,
yeah,
but
know.
There's a reason you pull up, and you catch fish, and then all of a sudden it dies off. And I think some of that is, you know, trolling motor, and people moving around in the boat, and... You know, slamming lids and stuff, and it does spook some fish.
Do you ever fish around on big islands?
Up like Masters and.
Off Masters,
yeah.
Or further up towards the dam?
Yeah.
Do you ever catch any?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a brush pile off the one there on the Sac River. There's a brush pile just on the west side of it that it's okay. I mean, I can't say I catch a lot of fish off of it, but it's. I fish the Sac River arm more than the Little Sac. Now that's just because of the location where I'm at. But you can go to the Sac River arm and duplicate the same thing. Yeah, exactly.
Now, how do you relate the crappie to the thermal cline in the summertime?
Most of the time, does everybody know what the thermal cline is? It's just a line down the water, basically, where the cold water or the warm water hits the cold water, There's not a big separation. You can hit down there, and if you dive a lot, you can hit, you know, there's 10, 15, 20-degree difference in the water quick. And you get down there to that spot, and I think everybody's probably dove in the water, and it's warm, and you get down there, and all of a sudden you hit cold water or something. And that's just where the two haven't separated. I've heard varying stories on it. I've read some stuff about it. The amount of oxygen below the thermal cline is not as great as that above it. I don't know how many people have ever run trot lines and stuff, but you go out there and you check your trot line, you got a dead catfish on it, and there's nothing ate it, but the catfish is just stone cold dead, and you don't know why. Usually that's because you got down below the thermal cline. Fish will go down and feed. They'll go down and find shad that have fallen out or whatever it is they eat down there. But sometimes there's not enough oxygen to sustain the fish's life, so they get down there, and they run out of oxygen. So with that being said, I usually stay at or above the thermal cline. The thermal cline's in 35 foot of water, and I'll be fishing 33 to 28, something like that, and stay above that instead of going below it because the fish aren't living down there to the way I understand it, at least. And I've tried fishing below it stuff, even though you see stuff on the screen. I haven't had a lot of luck fishing below it.
What do they mean when they say that the lakes turn over?
It's dissolved. The thermal cline's dissolved, and it's the lake isn't going to all turn over at once. I mean, we've all seen a little greenish color or whatever, and it looks a little different. But the whole lake doesn't do that at once. It's just because the temperature, you know, fall, the surface temp starts to go, and the thermal cline dissolves, and it usually stirs up the lake a little bit or something to the point where, you know, the fish are a little bit tougher to catch sometimes. But they're not quite as active.
You probably couldn't find a thermocline right now.
No. You couldn't
find. It forms when the surface water starts getting warmer.
Yeah, it won't come up till, you know, middle of May, June, July. It just depends on if we ever get above freezing.
Scuba diver down there, when you see a thermocline, it looks like a white cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And then it clears up just amazingly clear right under it.
Yeah. You know, I've got my diving certificate. Who asked that? Okay, hi. I've got my diving certification. I I haven't went down there and really looked. I know it is clear. I mean, the water.
It's a lot clearer.
Yeah.
Above.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, if that, I don't know what causes that exactly, what why it does that. But
all the plankton and all like the up above thermocline.
Well, that's true. All the plankton, all the live
yeah,
stuff.
All
there's the ice I broke yesterday.
Do you?
Do what? Oh, yeah. I fish for walleye all the time.
You find in the summertime, you catch them right on the plant?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, they'll bite. And, you know, the walleye, this is this, or did I even bring one, or a little pony head, the half a night crawler, is what I'm throwing for walleye 99% of the time, probably.
You're right. I mean,
road runner.
Are you just yeah. bumping them off the bottom?
Yep, just running them across the bottom. If it really gets tough, I mean, I'll go through the trouble of putting on a bottom bouncer and a slow death rig or something. But it, for the most part, I mean, it's just
now,
right
there. Are
you
trolling that rubber around, or are you casting it?
Casting it, reeling it back usually.
What's the ounce?
What's the what?
For walleye, what ounce head?
Eighth usually. I've caught them on a quarter. It just depends on the wind. You want to get to the bottom. And if you want to move your boat a little bit while you're doing it and move around and stuff, you want to keep it on the bottom. So it just depends on how deep you want to get it. I mean, I know they'll hit bigger. They'll hit quarter ounce and stuff because, you know, they're down there hitting stuff on that big old bottom bouncer. So,
are you still fishing a four-pound tester or have you got
six.
A heavier six?
Yeah, I always got six-pound test on for the walleye. I don't fish anything other than the six-pound test. Unless for some reason they're really slow and I start trolling for them, then I'll put on something bigger just to so I don't break it off. Go ahead.
Can you give me a resource for a good topo map for Stockton Lake?
Let me see that map yet.
Bass Pro shot.
Yeah, Bass Pro's got them. Fins and Feathers got them. Yeah. Be a little bit really easier getting out of.
It'd probably be a hell of a lot cheaper too.
Yeah, you can get on. You can get online and find all kinds of them.
I've been online, I just haven't been able to find some.
In fact, I mean, I don't even go to Walmart anymore, but Walmart used to have a whole book of all the lakes.
Yeah, they still
have that? Yeah, they got a big old book that, you know, you can open up, and they've got different maps through everything. Am I really that boring?
Yeah.
Am I? Did you guys leave your $10 on your seat?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Okay, let's go into the fall pattern. Other than winter, because we're going to get behind here. Other than winter, I mean, fall fishing is phenomenal. You don't have to. A lot of locals will go out and fall fish all the time, but you don't get all the weekenders and all that stuff that are just going out fishing. And fall fishing, it's hard to beat going out and being able to catch the fish that you can catch in the fall. Again, the fish are moving in. They're going to be feeding on shad, and they're just feeding up for the winter. They're just gorging themselves. It's kind of like we do over the holidays. You know, they eat whatever's in front of them, and you want to find, again, something close to the channel drops, something close to a ledge or in front of a bluff. I don't know how many people have ever fished off Ruart Bluff here, walked up and down it. Excellent place to go. That's Chicken Rock. I can't even think all the names, all the bluffs. It doesn't matter. I mean, most of the bluffs, you look at your map, see where the channel comes in close to the bluff, and go out there and just take nothing more than, I usually take two fishing rods if I'm fishing from the bank. And if I just got an hour or something in the evening, I'll just run down there. And all you got to do is put that on with a crappie jig, put it on both rods, cast it out as far as you can cast it, straight out. And what I do is just cast both of them. Pick one of them up, and you just start reeling it back in super slow, and just keep bouncing it off the rocks. You'll lose lots of jigs, but you'll catch lots of fish. It's by far the probably, other than the winter, it's probably tied with winter as far as the ease of catching a fish without having to go and catch them spawning. I mean, if you get them on the right day spawning, it's great, but with the fronts, you just never know what you're gonna get. So fall, you look for some place where the channel swings in close to a point, close to a bluff or something like that, and fish those fish the drop off right there and just bounce it off the bottom. Just keep, you know, just hitting it right off the bottom and stuff. I've had days out there where you go out and whenever you start casting, you find a school of crappie, and every cast you'll just let your lure start falling down. Right before it hits the bottom, you'll see your line just twitch once. set the hook and you got another fish. And you never feel it bite. You never feel nothing. You just see your line twitch once right before it hits the bottom when you set the hook. And that's a lot of what crappie fishing, between washing your line and feeling it, I mean, you got to be ready. Sometimes they don't give you a second chance like some of the other fish. I mean, catfish, you know, it can be, they might stay there all day if you got a good enough liver on there. But the crappie don't do that. In the fall, those crappie can be any place from the bank up in 3 foot of water, and they can go all the way out to, I usually don't catch them over 23, 24 foot in the fall, but you know, there's days the shad are on out, and those fish will move out a little bit more and be out there. Again, it doesn't seem like the fronts affect those fish near as much. Those fish that are out in 15 to 25 foot of water that are not affected near as much by the fronts that come through. So a post-cold front, I've been out there and fished the day after a cold front comes in and sat there and caught fish after fish up to 15. And then you got to quit. But it does, you know, I like it more than the summer. In the summer, you're sweating and fighting all the skiers and stuff. In the fall, you don't have to do all that. And it's a blast to go out there and fish them. Usually something that is close to, like a channel that's got a brush pile close by, something, some kind of cover, even just like the ledge. It's got huge rocks down there and stuff, and you can get on those places and catch all kinds of crappie. Either a pony head or just an 1/8-ounce jig head with one of them two inch grubs, and you'll catch all the crappie you need 9 times out of 10, not always. But, and then you come in. What is that? All the seasons?
That's it.
Wow. All right, I wrote this down right here, the Poximus nigramalacetulus.
It's easy for you to say. I don't know. I can't.
That's a black crappie. A lot of people, you know, especially during the spawn, there's two kinds. They got the white crappie and the black crappie. The black crappie has the more the dots, and it doesn't have the spiral-looking look. But a lot of the fish, a lot of the males will turn darker. They don't turn into black crappie, but they turn darker during the spawn. And you'll be out there, someone will catch one and say, oh, that's a black crappie. Well, you know, you can look at it and say, no, that's a white crappie. And, people want to argue with you. But the white crappie will have up to 6 dorsal fins in the back. The black crappie has 7 or 8. That's the best way to tell, especially during the spawn, because it's not always, since they've turned dark, it's not always easy to see those lines. But you just look at the white crappie and you count up to the 6 dorsal fins, and the black crappie has 7 or 8. I think we got probably more black crappie in Stockton than the white crappie. But you can catch some big white crappie in that place.
They taste all the same.
And they taste the same. Lard is definitely the way to cook them. That's my whole little thing. Equipment-wise, you know, I don't want to offend anybody. You know, a lot of people relate a fishing rod that is sensitive to how much it bends. You go to Bass Pro, I got some family that'll buy them yellow banana-looking things, and you can bend them, tie knots with them. And that doesn't mean they're sensitive. You know, if you go out and you buy one good rod, a good ultralight rod that's got good sensitivity to it, I'm not going to endorse any makes or anything, but there's a lot of companies that make them. It's going to cost you $100, $140 thereabouts to get one good crappie rod, and it will outdo 5 of your other ones. I mean, you'll go out there in the wintertime, summertime, in the spring it doesn't matter. You can go out there with a Zebco, and you know, your bobber goes under, you set the hook. You know, it's not that, right? It doesn't take, you know, a rocket scientist to figure that one out. But in the wintertime, In the summertime, whenever they, you know, on a day that they're not hitting very good, I can sit there with one of mine, like a St. Croix or something that I've got, and you don't have to hold on to the line. You just hold on to that rod, and you will feel the slightest little touch from that crappie. And sometimes that's all you get. It's just one little thing, you know, it just picks it up, and then it spits it back out when it figures out it's not really a shad. And that's all you're looking for. And it will up your catch if you would spend the money on a good fishing rod instead of buying a bunch of Zebcos and stuff that are using the ones you got laying around the house. Like you said, if all you're going to do is go out and spring fish, then you don't need to do that. But What, you got one you want to sell?
I was wondering if you could put that in writing so I could tell my wife.
Hey, go ahead. Put it down. It's going to be on tape. You can play it back to her. What's her name?
We'll get to that
after. But you heard him.
Well,
so.
Once I get that in writing.
But, I mean, it does make a difference. I mean, I would be more apt to spend money on a nice rod than a nice reel. I mean, the reel, all you got to do is bring the fish back up. And you can do that by hand if it breaks. If you don't feel the fish bite, then you never get the opportunity to set the hook. And I've sat beside people that have used, I mean, you'd think they were just using a bamboo stick sometime. Because, I mean, I've seen their rods bending. And I don't know, maybe they don't have any sensitivity in their arms, but you can see their rod bouncing, and you're like, you got a bite. They're like, no, you don't. I know I don't. I'm like, no, you do, you know. And then finally they'll feel it. It makes a difference if you use a good quality rod and something that you can feel everything on. I usually throw a 6 foot. I don't like, people like them 7 foot. I'm only, you know, 5'6.5". I don't, a 7 foot rod, I can throw myself in the lake. So there's people that swear by them, you know. I think it's just because I'm short. So 6 foot, 6'6", about as long as I can do it. Five, you know, you get the 5.5. I don't like going too short. But right around 6 foot is my favorite.
Light or medium light?
Ultralight. Ultralight. Yeah. Almost everything. For all the walleye I catch and all the crappie I catch is all ultralight. I very seldom throw anything different. I mean, half the fun of it is the fight. And, you know, you get a 4 or 5 pound walleye on an ultralight and 6 pound test, it's fun. I mean, you know, we caught an 8 pound walleye, I think it was last year, July 4th. That guy, I had 3 in the boat. His son had 3 in the boat. And this grown-up's up front. He's like, I know I'm getting bit. I just can't feel it or something. So he sets the hook, and he goes, that feels like a big fish. And it was a buddy of mine. It wasn't even a paid trip. So I about shoved him over and caught it myself. But he caught him an 8, I think it was an 8.3. And, I mean, it's fun to fight whenever you get him on the ultralights and stuff. Someone else had their hand up there a second ago. 40 minutes. I'll sing a song. Do I have to go to 9 o'clock?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
Oh, I got to be out of here by 9.
You're supposed to be out.
Good. I'm going to run out of breath. Anybody else got any questions or anything? Or
one more.
All right.
You go out tomorrow. You're fishing 50 feet below a shad school. And you've got your 8-ounce jig on. How long does it take to get that sucker down there?
Most of the day. You know, usually if I'm fishing in 50 foot of water, I'll put 2 jigs on just to get it down a little bit faster. It really does. It's not that big of a deal, but you get 2 jigs on it and just double jig it, and you'll get down there in no time. It doesn't, I mean, 30 seconds, maybe 15 seconds. I mean, I never really timed it. But you know, everybody's like, how do you know you're on the bottom? Well, I mean, your line quits going out. That's, I don't know how to better put it. You know, your line's sitting there, it's loose. You reel it up and get both jigs off the bottom, and you're ready. But, you know, if you go out there, and your biggest thing right now is a lot of dying shad. I mean, the shad die. I mean, you guys see it, you know, Table Rock, all the lakes got, you know, they, in the wintertime, shad die off, and they'll just start falling out of that ball of shad. I bet there was 1,000 shad around Ruark yesterday morning. I mean, they were thick, and I broke through some of the ice, and there's some of them that were just barely swimming up top, and, you know, they're all feed. The birds are feeding on them, but those will fall down to the bottom. And the cove I was in yesterday just had, I mean, I don't know if they were all dead shad or not, but it was about, you know, on the screen, there's like a line like this above the bottom. And it was probably 4 or 5 foot deep of just stuff. And, you know, it had to be shad that died. I don't know what else would be laying down there. But you get down there in them and just start mimicking a hurt one, and the crappie go off on it. So,
summertime, night fishing under a light?
Good question. Yes, excellent way to catch crappie, a whole lot cooler. Bring some that whatever spray for the bugs. But yeah, you put a light down. I use the, it's like a green light that goes down into the water, the LED thing. They got those floating ones on the styrofoam that you can put out there. But excellent way to, and all those things do is draws in some bugs, that draws in some bait fish, that draws in some crappie. And that's basically...
The structure is the same as...
Yep. Yeah, a lot of people do it out around the bridge piers on Stockton. And you can get around those bridge piers. And, you know, as soon as you post a report about something like that, you usually have trouble finding a bridge pier for a few days because everybody's going out there and trying it. And, you know, but any place that's got structure or shad or drop-off or someplace that usually holds crappie, you can do that on.
In relationship to his question, okay, night fishing, grounded minnows with snorkel light. And I've heard this both ways. Full moon, clear sky, big, bright full moon. Your opinion, help you or hurt you? I've heard this both ways.
Yeah, my personal opinion, this is just what I think. I've almost like deer hunting and everything else. Seems like the full moon, early morning, late evening is a little bit tougher. Right after dark gets tough. Or if you're out there right before daylight. Sometimes, you know, middle of the day sometimes is a better time to fish, or in the middle of the night. Seems like it's a better time to fish during the full moon. It's I've fished quite a bit, you know, and I can't stay up like I used to. So usually an hour or two after the moon's, you know, after the sun's went down, I'm like, skip it. I'll just go home. But the best fishing, you know, and just like the deer move middle of the day sometimes during the full moon or the middle of the night, I think the fish do some of that too. And I don't know, Phil, you can chime in on that a little bit if you want to, but that's, you know, kind of my experience on it. When you sleep during the full moon?
I have no idea.
Dang, I thought he was fishing. But that's my personal opinion on it, and that might just be a luck thing. I might give up too early. Who knows? But it does the full moon changes things, and 2 or 3 days each side of the full moon changes the patterns up a little bit.
A lot of times, what the moon is depending on what kind of luck we had last year.
Yeah. You still catch fish. Yeah, you catch fish, but not as much. And I think if you stayed out there till 2 in the morning.
We were.
Which, yeah. Are you worried?
Yeah.
I wasn't. I was asleep. I was asleep.
Does the full moon trigger the swan? I've heard that.
Yeah, and I've heard that. I'm not a biologist. I don't know that for sure. But it does seem that the fish are more, you know, if everything else is right and the full moon hits, they're more apt to move up. And I don't think it's a, you know, I've heard people at the ramp, you know, they moved up last night. No, they don't all move up at once anyways. Not like all of a sudden, you know, a bell rings, they're all going up to spawn. You know, they all go at different times. But the full moon and that kind of stuff does have a little bit to do with some of it, I think. It does affect it.
About white bass, you got anything to say about
them? Yeah. You know, it's coming up. If you guys like to catch the white bass, you know, they'll be the first thing to spawn up the rivers. And if you like to catch them, you go up there at the white jig and flip the shallows, and you'll catch all the white bass you want. But I don't, you know, I'll go up on some trips and take clients up there to fish for them because they want to catch lots of fish. And they're fighting fish. They're a blast to catch. But, I mean, I think there's better eating fish. But that's, you know, as far as catching them, you can do that. Or in the fall, whenever they start coming up and feeding on the big schools of shad, you know, that for a kid, if you're going to take a kid fishing, when they're schooling up and they're popping the top of the water, you can throw, what do I usually throw at them? Like a rattle trap or something, and throw in there, and you'll catch them every cast. I've had five-year-olds out there on a Snoopy rod just reeling them in. And it's a blast because I don't even know how they fill them, but they catch them. But as far as catching white bass in the middle of the year, I mean, I'll stumble on them. I don't go out and target them. It's either walleye. I mean, number one's probably walleye and then crappie. But I probably have more tricks for walleye than anything. Well, that it? Well?
Since you're talking about walleye, I've tried to, you know, find them early in the spring. A lot of guys say it's February when they start.
No, I think it's more March before they start spawning. Right now the water temp's 35 degrees.
Okay, so the walleye don't spawn early. Okay, but I've had some people tell me that the really big ones are right below the dam at Stockton.
Well, below the dam would be like, sure.
I mean,
yeah.
Close to the dam.
That'd be another guy. He Everybody says the dam. You know, go to the dam and fish those points and all that. There's some secrets to finding them. I mean, you're just going and pounding a point, you'll catch a few fish, but look for a little something different, something that's different on the bank, either a little cut or something sticking out in the water, or little finger sticking out or something, and hit those areas. Try to locate them, the deeper fish on your electronics, and you can drop down shad or something like that. Last year I had an excellent year, just taking those jigs during the day, fishing out in about 20 foot of water, and then the evenings going up the shallow water when the fish moved in, because they don't make beds like crappie do. They just kind of drop their eggs and do all their stuff a little different than what the crappie do. They might be.
You don't run up the rivers and catch them.
Yeah, you can run up the rivers and get them, and you can do it in the on the main lake points. Either way, they'll spawn on either one of them. Well, hey, thank y'all, and.